Good morning, good evening, or maybe good afternoon for those who are watching on the other end of the world, right? There's a lot that has happened this week. And I do want to say that I shared a post about this, about the fear factor that is being amplified at the moment right now. And I know that there are so many people dealing with the uncertainty when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, mainly predominantly in the US. But we also have to keep ourselves sane when it comes to this, especially in Europe. There are many laws that are protecting us from the fear that is happening at the moment right now. And also, in the end, companies still have to drive, still have to win, still have to tap into the different stakeholders, right? And you cannot do it without the people. So I'm super, super, super excited about having this conversation with Yuta, and also knowing that, we need all the people right now, because at the moment right now, there's not only a talent shortage in Europe, there's also a talent shortage in the US. So what I advise all the people out there, and definitely look into my post, but what I can say is that in the end, this is a business case of what's happening right now with the companies that are deactivating their inclusion policies. In the end, this is a business case of what not to do. So, how to amplify turnover when it comes to people turnover, how to amplify exclusion, how to amplify legal risk, how to amplify anything that is impacting the business in a negative way. So, keep a close eye on what's happening. And let's see within 1 or 2 years how far they are going, compared to at the time when they do have that activated. But let me go back to the main conversation for today, right? Because today is about who are managers missing out on. And I want to start with this amazing woman, because when I first met her, I met her at an Indeed conference, which was held in the Netherlands. And unfortunately, we didn't meet face to face, but however, I knew that she was coming. And at the time, I had to fly out to Barcelona on that same time. So I missed out on her talk that she did on that day. And I wasn't stalking her, but I was pursuing her in a light way, and also asking Indeed Netherlands, like, is there a recording of her conversation, of her talk? Because I heard so much positive things, and her talk is about her story. And based on that story, I asked her to, if she would come as a guest, to talk about the main sentence or the main theme of her talk. So today we are going to talk about who are managers missing out on? Because that is such a pivotal thing that we need to have a conversation about. Because nowadays, with the talent shortages that is out there, and with the challenges that many companies are facing, we need to be sure that we are aligned with the business goals, but also are aligned with how can we find the right talent for the right place at the right time? So I want to make sure that I introduce her the right way. So this is Uta, and she is the Principal Talent Intelligence at Indeed, and she drives innovation and inclusivity by connecting global and local strategies. With her deep HR expertise, she champions diversity, equity, and inclusion to create a better work for all. So welcome, Uta, to this conversation. How are you?
I'm really grateful to be with you together on this morning, afternoon, evening session here in this LinkedIn Live, because I also believe we are stronger together. And using our
Definitely.
communities, our voices right now to make sure that everyone gets maybe a positive sign, or even gets, a bit of a push in the right direction, is something what we have to do. It's not anymore an opportunity, it's a must do what we have to do every day. And this is a perfect Friday start for me to be your guest here and talk about who are managers missing out, because you're right, it is a business case. It is a business case. You miss people. And humans are the most valuable thing in your companies. You are missing people.
Exactly.
So there is
Exactly,
no,
because sorry.
No, go ahead.
Sorry, to draw upon what you are saying right now, because I want to share the flooring scenario. What if, let's say that those who are deactivating DEI right now, they are working with the status quo, right? Within a year, you will see a lot more vacancies, which is a good thing for Indeed as well, but it's not a positive thing if you currently see the same vacancies open and in, open out, right? Because that will indeed hurt their scores, their inclusion scores or their well-being scores. I know that you Indeed have something like that where you can see how well a company is doing or how bad a company is doing, right? So I want to make sure that those who are in positions, those who are leading, but those who are also responsible for recruiting and retaining people, that we have this necessary conversation. So a little bit about your role, because I'm curious about what you do exactly. Can you share a little bit about it?
For sure, I can. And, you know, in my role at Indeed, where everyone is waking up with this mission in mind, we help people get jobs. I would say, in an easy picture, I'm the bridge between data and humanity. And, you know, you already said it, Indeed sits on a lot of data, and bridging this to make this visible and available is, I think, a most important thing, because then we have data and not just another opinion. So I connect the dots to uncover stories about the talents we are missing in executive engagements or other engagement types, opportunities where we're not seeing, and honestly, in the end, how organizations can hire better, not just for today, honestly, also for the future, because we already know what will be happened in the upcoming years. We already know who was born, who will be available, and so on. So if I need to summarize it a bit, my work ensures that potential isn't invisible, because in the world of algorithm, everyone is talking about algorithm and data points, the human element should be never getting lost. And this is my mission, this is my job, and this is why I come every day full passionate to work.
That is amazing what you just summarized. And I appreciate, you know, I've done different collaborations with Indeed as well. And I'm always curious about how people within Indeed think about this question. But also I wanna make sure that I've captured your way of humanizing the workplace, right? Because it's the main theme of the show. And what is your definition of humanizing the workplace?
So humanizing the workplace, I have sometimes the feeling, and it's good that you asked, it's already coming a buzzworthy thing, and we have to capture this buzzworthy element. So for me, it's about we creating an environment where people don't just work, they thrive to work. It's for me about shifting from the focus where we have the productivity to work well-being, to belonging. There is already the case of retention, right? And for sure, this is a human element, growth. So a humanized workplace values the whole person for me, and recognize that when employees feel seen, supported, and empowered, they bring their best selves to work. So it's, for me, building cultures for thriving to work, to the workday, feeling fulfilled, energized every day, or nearly every day, but also feeling ready to go and contribute again tomorrow, because we spend so much time at work, and it will come another day, another day, another day. So that means we have to build this in our mind. It's not only ready to contribute today, it's about again tomorrow, again tomorrow, again tomorrow. And this needs a cultural shift.
Yeah, to give a little sneak preview, I'm going to share, you know, sneak bits so that people get more curious about your particular talk, because your talk, the main title was about, would you hire me? And, you know, without knowing your talk and seeing your image, I was just like, okay, but what's with you? Because with the image that you are sharing and also with the title, it makes me wonder why you are bringing up that question without even knowing you and what you were talking about. And then all of a sudden, you were talking about food and empathy. So I want to ask you, can you share more about this concept, why this concept connects to your work in fostering inclusion?
Absolutely. And let me say this upfront. I always searching for a more digestible way to talk about diversity and inclusion. Ooh. You know, if we come with a big word, diversity, D-I-N-D plus, exactly. Inclusion, sometimes the people are like, too big. I can't do something. I can't imagine what it means. Do I have really this? There's always something that people step a bit back. And this is why I decided to bring also here a more easy picture to it. And food is for me always the symbol of connection. Food is universal. Everyone from us eats something. It breaks barriers, and it reminds us also that we all belong to a table, because however the table looks like, smaller, higher, you know, in Japanese, differently as in Europe and so on, we belong to a table, and this also brings the different layers to it. So because a table can be half different sizes, the chairs can be looking differently, and even the food will be differently on the table. Mm-hmm. And now here comes this twist. Even if we go with friends to a lovely dinner, do we go every time to the same restaurant? If your best friend's eating all the time the same dishes on the table, no, they don't do. Because we are not just male or female. We are not just Ute and Vivian. We have a lot of layers, diverse layers into it. And give them the space to rethink what it really means. That helps me to bring this philosophy to what it really means to work with this piece of inclusion in mind. And especially, you know, here in Germany, sometimes the people understand inclusion is just to help disabled people. But this is not the case.
No.
So it's about creating a space where everyone is invited, welcomed, and valued. So everyone has the chance to go throughout the door, into the restaurant, find a suitable space on the table, and select the dishes. Is this always easy? No. Can this be challenging to decide on the table for a specific dish if you have to decide for a dish? Yes, it will be. But it reminds us all that a good conversation, a good challenge each other, drives also something forward. So for me, is empathy the key ingredient to turn a workplace into a community? And be sure, not a family, into a community.
Yes, there's so much to decipher with what you just shared right now. Because the moment that I heard about you talking about food, I always talk about the carrot cake, and I always address that all these concepts about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it needs to marinate, and we need to break it down in bite-sizable things so that people can digest it better. And for you to bring up this concept in a way that people can still feel okay with being in an all-you-can-eat restaurant with all the menu options, and they still feel safe, while some other people may run away because it has too many options, or some other people overconsume because it has too many options, right? So the fact that you create a way that is so aligned with how I do it, because food connects people. I'm grateful to have found a foodie partner who talks about this and also breaks it down when it comes to inclusion, because we eat differently. I don't know. I mean, there are people that eat the same all the time, right? But there are a few of them. And it will be boring to eat the same all the time, every day. We need to diversify our workforce, just like we diversify our foods and switch palates so that we get all the nutrients in. So I get that.
If you allow me, I would just add something, because I also got this question in this direction. What are people telling they all the time eat the same and want to eat the same? I'm saying, it can be the truth. It can be the best at the moment for them. But what they are doing if potatoes next day is not anymore available? What are you doing then? Yeah. You know, it's also thinking about how resilient we are if we understand the beauty of diverse opportunities. I'm not saying you have to eat everything with passion. And you have to like everything of food. No, no, no. This is not my key message. Yeah. But creating this space also, this is more resilient and have this in mind, is I think also something what is really too easy and really easy to understand with the food in mind.
Yes, definitely. And you're bringing up an ingredient that definitely within Western of Europe, or I think all of Europe or elsewhere, if you would, we would remove potato from the staple, I think many dishes wouldn't survive. I don't know how the Netherlands would survive or Germany would survive without potatoes. So that's a good thing that you're bringing this up. I want to ask you a personal thing, right? So the question that I want to ask you, has there been a personal experience or a moment in your career that shaped how you think about inclusion in combination with the role of managers?
Oh, there are two main elements, maybe. And I would start with my really personal perspective. And it's like I realized early that I'm not the ideal candidate for everyone. So, and I was also not the ideal candidate for assistant. Assistant that's designed was for the best candidate out of the best candidates. Due to my background, I was not ticking all these traditional boxes. To be clear, I grew up in the eastern part of Germany. I never learned English at school. I was not going first to a higher education degree. So I took a bit longer for my university. I got serious during my university time, and that left me disabled. So if you are thinking boxes, oh no, I was not in the right time. I was not speaking the right languages. I was not even abroad during my study time because I could not afford it to go it. So I was not a typical career woman that people, if they look at the moment to me, always thinking about everything was easy, everything was linear, everything was, you know, just a journey that I have to take on. It wasn't. It was a journey of really stumbling and finding a new way and fighting even harder for my own career. And also make people available, make people aware that there is not a career. There are multiple avenues in career pathways, and they could look differently. So this is my own story. In the end, it works perfectly out for me if I'm looking back to all the opportunities that I get. Sometimes being lucky, sometimes being really working hard for that. But there was also a lot of moments where I was pushed back because you was not abroad. You cannot be as an SVP directly because you have to have international experience. An international experience I only get if I go abroad. This is not the case. But I already learned in really my early life how it feels to be really excluded from our own society. My brother was born with the Down syndrome. And this is something what everyone is seeing directly.
True.
And immediately we was not in anymore from the society perspective. He has not the same opportunities for education. There was already a pathway was not the same opportunity for me. And seeing as a kid already or as a young sister that someone who really loves, that you love, and who really gives you advice for your future and talks to you, it's not the same opportunities. It's in my mind, it is in my heart, and it keeps me up every day. I want to fight for everyone who faces a barrier because it's not fair. They don't have equal opportunities. And they could do so much more.
Which brings me to, thank you for sharing your personal story and also about your brother. There are so many people out there that are very valuable for today's organization, but they are all being overlooked because we are ticking boxes in a way that isn't allowing them to be included. Right. And I like what you shared about yourself and also about your brother, that it brings a different perspective. And it also hopefully can unlock empathy amongst people. Who are we missing out on? Are you seeing too much of yourself? or are you not seeing a lot of yourself? And we need to be able to have that conversation, because as the way it's going, I noticed that a while ago, I think a few weeks ago, I noticed a report that there were less children being born. So there is the older generation is getting older, and there are more elderly people at the moment right now. Is the problem going to be fixed by us getting more kids in? No. But the problem can be fixed by diversifying our talent pool and doing it with the people that we have available now, but also crossing over different barriers or crossing over countries so that you can bring in talent as well. And to come onto the main title of the show, right? When you hear the phrase, who are managers missing out on? What does this mean to you? You shared a little bit about yourself and your brother, but also why is it important?
Yeah, let's start with a mindset element, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every perfect fit, even if you think about your perfect candidate, was once a risk. Or not every perfect ideal candidate was maybe the best hiring. Mm. Or is still the best employee. So that is always a risk. And to focus on mini-me's or pinguins recruits pinguins, right? Always the same, because they was on the same university. They are the same mm-hmm. age. They love what I eat. They have the same kind of humor. They look like me. They dress like me. Yeah. Then we really just really ticking boxes, and we don't recognize potential. And we also not open to someone who might challenge our thinking.
Mm.
And if we don't get someone who challenge our thinking, how we can grow, both personal and organizational, how we can grow our teams, how we can grow into a different dimension, how we can grow our product landscape. So growth mindset is something what a lot of people know, but we forget to bring this in if we talk about who we are missing out. Because if we all say, yes, we never got charged. And that means we never step out of our comfort zone. So that means for me, managers missing people who could transform their teams. So overlooked talents is not just a missed opportunity in this case. It's a loss of innovation, resilience, creativity. And I already started with this, for growth opportunities mm-hmm. to get challenged. So if we would always go for the same, again, having a university degree if it's not needed, having a university degree from the same university that I was is not needed.
Mm-hmm.
Working in the same way, in the same neuro-linguistic perspective is not needed. As long we are allowing us to integrate these people and also value these people and help them to hear the different voices. And then we are ready for growth, and we are not limiting anymore our possibilities. But more importantly, we invite people instead of overlooking them.
I love everything that you shared, and also, yeah. Companies don't have the luxury to skip out on inclusion, right, when it comes to this. And also bringing into the next question, as in, how can organizations better assess potential beyond the traditional markers like resumes, degrees, and job titles? Because you mentioned, you know, we cannot go for the penguins. The same penguin. There is this book about the penguin and the peacock, right? So I think you're referring to that one. Yeah, that's a good D&I book about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good D&I book, but also in Germany, we often use this phrase, penguins recruits penguins, for managers that are just looking for people they look alike. So they make mm-hmm. them really aware it's not needed to wear a suit. It's not needed to be on the same university. It's not needed to have just the right credentials. Mm-hmm. It's about who have the right skills, And also to shift the focus from what's written on paper or on a fancy LinkedIn page or somewhere else, right, to the potential behind. So, and, you know, what we have to do from my perspective is first, we need to adapt tools and strategies that really look deeper. Matching technologies that really match skills, skill-based assessments. But also helping these organizations that have worked in a traditional recruiting landscape, I don't know, 20 of years sometimes. You know, you have even hiring managers that are older, and it's fine, right? We need the older people, elderly people in our workspace. I really value them, right? But, you know, they have a certain understanding how recruiting looks like. And we have to train them. We have to bring them with us together, what it really means now, how the world has changed. And it's not okay anymore to ask, please tell me why you are the right person for our company. No, it's not okay. You have to tell them why they should join you. Why are you helping them to grow their career paths and so on? And this is what I also mean with humanizing, right? It's not just about a new technology. It's not just having a new matching algorithm, having a new AI technology. That all will be helping us. But in the end, it is the mindset, what really needs to get shifted. And hiring for potential doesn't mean a doctor doesn't need any more a doctor's degree. But it also means to be curious of someone what they can learn and not already what they have on their in their pocket, right? Because if you go back to this famous doctor example where everyone is saying, this is the thing where potential not works. And I was saying to not stop talking and said, no, it's not true. Even a doctor has to relearn with the new technology, how he's doing, how the new researchers looks alike, and so on and so on. There's also a learning pathway. So yes, we have to look for skills, but we should not incorporate just the paper, just the lookalike. We should integrate the whole person.
I immediately was thinking about when you talked about the doctor. I mean, I've seen so many doctors now training with virtual reality, where they can train students from all over the world by using virtual reality so that they can learn the skills in a safe environment without damaging a patient or without making any, they can make mistakes in a safe environment. That's what I wanted to share. And these are skills that were not necessary 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And now you see a different generation adapting, working aligned together with the tools that people are providing. Yet you also mentioned a really valid point that we need to retrain or train the current recruiters, because the way that we did things in the past doesn't work at the moment right now, where it's easier to create a mismatch or it's easier to hire somebody that can tick the boxes that you created 10 to 15 years ago. So I also am curious into what role does Indeed play in uncovering hidden talent? Can you share how talent intelligence is advancing this effort?
You know, I think with our mission, we help people get jobs. And there is even a small add-on. We help all people get jobs. And especially people who are facing barriers. We use our database. We use our technology really to help organizations to understand what they are missing out, what are the talents that they have overlooked. And I think just telling them without data would not work, but telling them with data whom they are missing out, how important diversity and inclusion is right now for selecting the companies as well, but also what it means in terms of work well-being and feeling belonged to a company. It's such an important thing, and data helps, and our advisors around the globe help with specific data sets, but we also use our voices on big conferences and share data, what it really means and how we can create a better place. And in the end, Indeed is using his holo data for a better matching algorithm, for a technology that helps all people, but also thinking about the future. And I think I already said it also on the future work stage in the Netherlands. We think about an AI agent. This is like a talent agent for everyone. So really to help them to thrive you to your next goal, career goal, can be the next job after maternity leave, can be another job after rethinking how you would like to work in the future and so on. But having someone who helps you assist you to bring you to this right pathway and even helps you to understand what is needed from your end, maybe to learn to get done before you can join. It's a lot what we can do with Indeed's database, and this is what we are here for. We help all people get jobs, and we help in companies to create a better future of work by helping job seekers and companies with data.
Thank you for sharing. And we're talking about using tools in a different way. So using your data in combination with AI. And it got me also thinking about the following question, like, how do you see the future of hiring evolving, and what trends should organizations prepare themselves for?
So one thing I believe is clear if we look back, the future of hiring needs adaptability.
Yes.
What we have done 2 years ago, it's not anymore valid. Well, no, it's still valid. But, you're already in the next circle of innovation. We're already in the next circle of opportunities. So we have skills. They are evolving faster than ever. Think about the AI development. AI is for Indeed over 20 years already a thing, because Indeed is based on algorithm, on multiple algorithms. So machine learning and so on is nothing new. But since then, it was available to everyone. It changed. The innovation cycle got faster. So, and this is also how the roles in the organization will change, how we are using technology for finding the right talents. It was never, ever so easy to source for candidates as it is now. So I remember still at times as I was responsible for talent acquisition, and we were thinking of guerrilla marketing and this and this and this, multiple layers. There was not such a variety of digital opportunities to really touch also people that are not sitting in your areas right now, because talent sits not always next to you. It can sit also far away. So it's continuous learning, it's reskilling, and it's for sure technology that helps us. And here is one twist for me. Don't look only just for technology to be fancy. Just look for technology that helps you to solve a problem that you face. And it's accessible for everyone. Technology can easily exclude people, honestly.
Yeah.
And we should be aware of that. So future of hiring means adaptability, accessibility, and continuous rethinking and learning.
And that brings me also to the next thing, because there's so much there that is being developed very fast. Like you said, everything that you did 2 years ago might not be relevant today, especially now with the speed of light that things are being designed right now. And for those who are curious, those who are part of the hiring of people, so HR professionals, managers, or the hiring committee, what tip would you give them regarding creating or reactivating their inclusive hiring journey?
Start small but intentional. Use your own internal data to understand where is your biggest gap, but also maybe where is your low-hanging fruit. Start Don't wait to be 100% precise, because you will never be. Don't wait to have the perfection in tools, in mindset, in hiring managers. It will be not there. So start small, but be intentional is my first journey advice. But then also, honestly, be open to audit your whole hiring process. Audit. And not just with your pair of eyes, with an accessibility walk.
Yeah.
Make sure that you really question yourself if this still is inclusive, is still the truth. And then, honestly, also listen to your employees. We always forget that we have humans, people in our companies. They are already bringing a diverse perspective. They are maybe not recruiters, but they have different kind of perspectives. Use them, listen carefully. And then, honestly, don't be afraid to do an experiment. And have in mind, failures are allowed.
Failures are lessons.
Yeah. Use them as lessons. Failures. Listen and learn. Because inclusion is, for me, not a one-time project, right? It's not something you go back after this call today or after this talk. Everyone is going back to their companies and saying, now we do for the next 2 quarters an inclusion project. And then we are done.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not a one-time project. It's a continuous journey. And this is what I mean is the key is here to start, to learn, and to keep improving. Mm-hmm. Every single small step matters.
Yeah, I agree. And also agree with the fact that we need to, a while ago I was interviewed and there was one thing that I was saying about this whole perfectionism. It's killing our creativity, because in a way we don't allow ourselves and other people to make a mistake and learn from that, right? Because there is a value in making a mistake so that you can learn from that, as long as you apply your growth mindset. But when you don't, when you apply your fixed mindset, yes, then every mistake is a failure, or everything that is a mistake is negative. But we need to reframe our way of thinking so that we allow ourselves to make valuable lessons that we can learn so that we can do better. A light bulb wasn't designed the first time, right? Computers weren't designed the first time. I mean, if you would see my first computer, and I'm dating myself, but if you would see my first computer, I used to have this floppy disk. And now we don't need no floppy disk anymore. Now everything is in the cloud, right? And that was all created based upon valuable lessons that in the beginning were mistakes. So I want to reiterate that as well. And for the managers who are listening, and also the leaders, those who are involved in the hiring cycle, what is the first step? Because you talked about, being intentional, start. But what can you recommend as a first step so that they ensure that they are not missing out on talent?
I would say your title helps them already. It's about asking yourself one simple question, or even a simple question. Who I'm not seeing? Who I'm not seeing? And then you can take action. Could be an audit from your own job description as a hiring manager. Does this really require all these elements they are in? Do I really tell people honestly how it feels to work with my team or for my team?
Yeah.
Then diversify also your talent sources. If someone says, I always go to this university or to this place or do this, or I just follow the route of recommended friends, you definitely will missing people in your workforce. And then, honestly, also rethink your interview process. And really rethinking this one. Do I really ask questions that are valuable for auditing is, does this person have this, the right skills? Or I'm asking still a question to just to confirm if it's a mini me and if he is thinking or she is thinking in the right, in the same perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these three elements are already small steps. This is not the whole, right? It's not including an onboarding element. It's not what we are doing for retention. It's not what we are doing for belonging. But we need to start small. And if we are thinking about our current workforce, this simple question, who I'm not seeing, helps also here. Who I'm not seeing so often in our team calls because this person remains silent.
Yeah.
It's an easy and simple question, but it helps.
Yeah, definitely. And also, just assume that not everybody has your lived experience, your background. And this whole idea of doing things based upon merit, it's because one of the reasons is because of merit at the moment right now that exclusion is being amplified. And who are you not seeing? That to me, it resembles merit in a way. I'm not saying that merit or meritocracy is false or wrong, but it diminish or it lowers the potential of your department or your company to innovate and to grow. So I would like to challenge you to ask yourself the question, can we base things on merit or can we expand things and go beyond the merit and see people for the skills, the valuable skills that they have? Don't look beyond their names, look beyond the color of the skin or look beyond the photographs. Just look at what skill set they have and how you can translate into the work that you have outstanding.
Absolutely.
We have reached there. I know that I shared a gazillion questions, but I also want to be mindful of the time. And I want to end it with this final question, as in, what is your wish for 2030? Because 2025 just started. 2030 is, you know, a few years away. What is your wish when it comes to humanizing the workplace and also when it comes to hiring the talent that is needed for the workplace?
You know, I would love to keep it maybe simple in mm-hmm. the end and reiterate on something what I already said. My wish for 2030 is a workplace where every person, every human feels seen, valued, and empowered.
Mm-hmm.
Just to bring their full selves to work.
Mm.
So to have really a workplace what is adaptable, adjustable, creating a space for these elements. So, and a place where we measure success not by who fits the mold, but who breaks it, who drives the growth. This would be my simple wish for 2030, knowing that isn't a simple wish. But it's about humans. It's about people. It's about involving people.
Yeah. I agree. On that note, I would like to say thank you for being open to joining me as the guest speaker for the first edition for Let's Humanize the Workplace, by the way, for this year, and having this conversation. So I'll make sure to reshare this conversation because you shared a lot of gems during this conversation, and also to help organizations to become more future-proof. Because I hope that your organization will exist longer than now. And we have to be future-proof, we have to consider diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's okay to rebrand it to inclusion. That's totally fine. as long as on the water you keep fairness and for all, you value those missions or you value those items, then it's okay for you to rebrand it.
You know, it's not a word what makes the difference. It's the action True. That you would take.
True. True. On that note, thank you, Uta, for joining me. And until next time, everybody.
Thanks a lot. Have a good Friday.
You too.